Hello and welcome to Season 14, Episode 8 of the Ubuntu Podcast. Today, we're going to be having tablet talk. We're going to have some GUI love and we'll go over your feedback. And joining me this week, the usual two fellas, Martin.
Hello.
And Alan.
Hello.
Ah, Martin, what have you been up to recently?
I got a new microphone.
Where is it? I can't see it.
Yeah, we can't see it.
I know.
It's invisible.
That's the whole damn point. So I've got a shotgun microphone, which is on a fixed boom. And as you can see me, the listeners can't. It's just there. It's about 6 inches from my face.
But just out of shot.
Up, not in front.
Upwards, yes. Right. Above my head, pointing down at my chin. And I got this because I've been doing that there live streaming on Twitch and YouTube for a while now, and I really hate that here's my massive microphone sort of YouTuber streamer aesthetic. You know, it's basically look at my equipment. And I don't like it. And I tried to move my Yeti Pro mic off a boom arm out of the way, but it's not designed to be used that way. So it sounded a bit crap.
Right.
It's fine for podcasting. But when we were podcasting as well, it was always in front of me so I could either see the show notes or you, but not both at the same time. So I've now got this so I can see what the heck I'm doing and don't look like one of those YouTube knobheads with a massive microphone.
So when you say a shotgun microphone, is it like a directional thing? So even though it's far away, it points at you. And if it's pointing at your mouth, then it'll still pick that up.
Exactly so. Yes. So it's, I don't know, about 20 centimeters long and thin and long and, yeah, points directly at my face.
Good. Alan, what have you been up to?
I have been writing my letter of resignation.
Oh.
Not from the show. I handed my notice into Canonical, and my last day will be on April 30th, which if you listen to this in promptly, it'll probably be tomorrow, as you listen to this show.
Wow. Or you've already left.
Or I've already left.
And good riddance to you.
Yes. Shut the door. Yes.
So what will you be doing instead?
I haven't actually talked about that yet.
I thought we'd have the scoop.
No, not yet. My last day's 30th of April, and currently my first day at a new job is...
If they don't change their mind.
Well, it's currently 17th of May. They left a bit of time not knowing what my notice period might be and whether... whether I would, you know, pass all the necessary checks and balances and all that kind of stuff you have to do when you hire a person. These days, it's very different getting a job these days than it was some years ago. Background checks, police checks, like all that kind of stuff that happens.
Wow. Doing all of your interviews online,
yeah.
Doing video conferences.
6 different interviews I had to get the job. That was fun. And, you know, because I haven't had an interview for 9 years because I've been working at Canonical for that long. And pretty much every job I've had before that has been, hey, Alan, do you want to come and work here? Yes.
Were you interviewed when you joined Canonical? Weren't you one of the chosen ones?
kind of. No, I had.
I mean, I guess they knew who you were already.
Yeah. Telephone. I have to say, one of my first, one of my first days at Canonical was HR induction. And the woman who was doing the HR induction for all the people who were starting, because at the same time, there was like 30 people all starting at the same time. And she pointed at this slide and said, you know, here's some information about the company, but you probably know all of this, and pointed at me because I was the only person in the room who was a community person, and kept pointing at me and highlighting the fact. And it was really weird because I'd been known to the company for so long, as a community person. And then, joined the company in 2011 or whenever it was. Yeah. But now it's time to move on. Something new and interesting.
Well, congratulations. I'll look forward to hearing more about what you're going to be doing around May the 18th.
Yeah, no doubt I will mention it at some point. Yes.
Brilliant.
Great. And with that, let's get on with it. Now then, Tablets are all the rage these days, aren't they?
They are around here.
Alan, you recently talked about getting a new tablet. And Martin, I believe you and your family have been enjoying tablets for quite some time. So shall we kick off with you, Alan? What is your new tablet and why did you buy it and what do you use it for?
So I wanted a tablet because I wanted something to be a content consumption device that's not my phone. I'm old and my eyes are bad and I want to sometimes watch videos or actually read books. And some of the books I want to read are not well formatted on a Kindle, and I have a Kindle. Some of them are PDFs and some of them are comic books. And I wanted something that would enable me to read technical PDFs, books that weren't in a format that the Kindle could render, and color comics. So I bought a Lenovo Tab M10 Plus 10.3-inch FHD tablet is the full description.
Gosh,
yes.
That's a lot of words, isn't it?
Basically a 10-inch tablet from Lenovo. It's really nice.
So I don't currently have a tablet, but the last tablet I bought was a Google Nexus 7, which I believe you had at one point as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So has much changed in the tablet world since then? Are there new features or are they just a bit bigger?
So I would like to answer that question by saying, yes, the technology's improved. I'd written off tablets years ago, and what's changed is world events. For me, that's what prompted the reintroduction of tablets and tablets actually being a of the now device around the house.
Right. Is that the same for you, Alan?
No. I just wanted something to be able to read those books and things on. I've had tablets before. I've had a BQ M10 and Nexus tablets before that. And they're all okay. I had a Tesco Huddle, which actually I really liked, the Huddle 2. Yeah. It was an Intel CPU in that. And that was quite performant. But no, things haven't really changed dramatically. It's still just really a big fat phone. You know, really, it's an Android. It's just an Android device. I was a little pleased to see that it was quite robust, the one I got. It's only 169 quid, which is super cheap for a tablet, really, that's 10 inch and has 4 gig of RAM and 64 gig of storage.
If you consider a phone with the same specs.
Right, and it has an SD card slot, so I can chuck all the books on an SD card and chuck that in and just leave it in there. And if I want to update them, I can, or I can drag them over the network or whatever. But that was it for me. I don't really care about anything else other than watching the odd TV program on it, watching the odd film, and then reading stuff. And it's really, really good at that.
Yeah. So our recent tablet journey started with us getting an Amazon Fire HD for my daughter for Christmas 2019, because she was using things like the Lego app to do Lego Boost and things like that, and repurposed phones were overheating and getting dangerous. And then lockdown happened, and that Fire HD suddenly became the most desirable device in the household, because we were talking to friends and family on it. You know, the early days of lockdown, all the rediscovering video conferencing and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And then lockdown proper came in and it was all about home education. And the limitation of that device is it's not hooked up to the Google Play store, so we couldn't get the things on it that we needed for some of the learning platforms.
Oh, interesting.
So we ended up getting, in fact, the tablet that Alan has just been talking about, my wife has, and I got the P10, its bigger brother. and we've been using those around the house as basically replacements for our phone, our mobile phones, and also our household phones. So they are the communications devices for talking to friends and family. And as Alan says, you know, watching Netflix, there are portable televisions in the kitchen. And the other thing I used mine for is my phone is still loaded with all the stuff that notifies me about work. And I just put the things on the tablet for reading and watching and listening to the things I want to do for fun.
Right.
And it created a bit of digital life separation where at the end of the working day, I leave my phone upstairs on charge and I take the tablet with me and I can't be interrupted by work-related matters because the tablet doesn't have any of that stuff on it.
So the kids got tablets for Christmas. Well, they didn't get them. I bought them tablets for Christmas. Father Christmas got them tablets for Christmas. And
old fat guy with the beard, right?
Yeah, he... Hang on. And he got them iPads. And the good reasons for that, they're already kind of bought into that ecosystem. But it was actually playing with their iPads and going through the initial setup of the iPad. And I was like, oh, God, this is nice. And, oh, this is really easy to read, you know, color books on this kind of stuff. Because I read a few documents on theirs and I thought, oh, I need something. But I couldn't bring myself to buy an iPad. I didn't want to spend that much for something that's a glorified ebook reader, right? Whereas they're using it more extensively for video editing or video conferencing or whatever else they're doing. So that's why I went low end, like budget tablet, and only spent 170 quid. But you can really see the difference in the onboarding on Apple versus Android. On the Apple devices, it was super smooth going through the setup process. It was very silky smooth. On this Lenovo, it first powered on pretty quickly and goes through the first setup, the Google, you know, give me your email address, connect to the Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. And then it gave me this optional, do you want to sign up for a Lenovo account as well? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, not really. and I didn't set up, I didn't copy any data from any other devices because, like Martin said, I wanted this to be clean. I didn't want any work email or any of that stuff on it. And once I set it up, it popped up and said there's an update. And the update numbers aren't like 10.2. It's some lengthy, like 32-character file name. It's obtuse. It's really awful. And then you update. And I did that update. And after I updated it, because I thought, well, out of the box, there's always an update. You know, it's been sat on a shelf somewhere, so there's always going to be an update. So I let that one slide. And then after I rebooted, I thought, I wonder if there's any more updates. I'm just curiosity got the better of me. And I went to the system update, and he went, yeah, you've got another update. You're going to go from Android 9 to Android 10 now. And that was a gigabyte download. So I downloaded that, did it, plugged into the power, and eventually it did the whole upgrade. And then I thought, there can't be any more. There can't be any more. And sure enough, go to the system update, and there's a third one. So out of the box, I had to do 1.5 gig of downloads spread across 3 reboots to get this thing to where it is now. Now, the nice thing is I've got a modern version of Android on there. I've got Android 10. So that's like the up and down of it is I don't really like the onboarding process, but the nice result is I've got a modern version of Android on a tablet.
Right. So my experiences completely echo that. And we've obviously explained. So you have an M10. We got an earlier version, which comes with Don't Speak Her Name speaker dock that it sits in and charges from and turns into one of those speakers. So not only did you have to go through Google sign up, you get prompted for a Lenovo one, and then also Amazon wants your details as well. And as you say, multiple rounds of updates and all the rest of it. I've got the P10, which had the same feature. And then recently I decided to upgrade and I've got the P11 Pro. All of these are from Lenovo. So this is 4 Lenovo tablets that, you know, the two of us have ended up getting in the last year.
So, Alan, you've spoken about, you know, your choice of tablet was, you know, you've gone for the entry level tablet because your main thing is reading books and you want a good screen to read books on, but you don't need a lot of processing power. Martin, you've spoken about several different models of increasing spec. Now, what is it that you get from the higher spec devices that you can't do on the lower spec?
So between the M10 and the P10, the M10 being what my wife has and what I have, the only feature the P10 has that I wanted was it has a fingerprint reader. And that's because I use that to access my password manager and authenticating with things. And I have that on my phone, and not having that was going to be quite a wrench. So that was the only reason I got that one. And like Alan says, these are not uber expensive tablets.
Yeah.
I got them because the price was right. And also they're basically more or less pure Android. They're not super customized and skinned. You know, they're quite plain and straightforward and easy to use.
But what about the P11 Pro?
So that is a departure. That's, I would call that a mid to upper range tablet. And I would just say this, my P10 I still have. I use it as a control surface in the office, and it is a bit gutless and not great and a bit awful, but I love it. I absolutely loved this tablet, and I wouldn't be separated from it. And in fact, you know how children have like comforters and things that they carry around when they're toddlers? My tablet has been likened to a comforter in that I cannot be found anywhere in the house without it accompanying me. And because it's not the best, and it is a bit of a gutless wonder, and I was using it all the time, I decided to upgrade and get a more capable device, which is why I got the P11 Pro, which has got a whole raft of features, none of which I use, but I do like the fact it's got a slightly bigger screen. Alan and I both wear glasses on a full-time basis now, and I know I'm getting old because the first thing I do after I've logged into Google on my Android device is go and find the font configuration and touch it up a couple of points. So having an 11-inch screen and being able to push the font size a bit more was also desirable because I'm reading on it as well.
There are cheaper tablets. Don't get me wrong. This isn't the bottom of the barrel in terms of tablets, and it is Lenovo. Like, there's some no-name Chinese ones that almost certainly will get no Android updates. That was a factor. Although I am under no illusion that I'm going to get any more updates for this thing beyond the next few months, right? And I don't particularly care about. But it's not a Samsung one. I specifically didn't want to get Samsung tablets, despite everyone raving about many of the various Samsung models, because I just don't like the thing that Samsung does with Android that it puts over the top. I've never liked
Touch
it.
TouchWiz.
That's the one. And all the whatever S apps and all of that. Just couldn't get on with it. And I, from the reviews that I saw of this M10, it seemed pretty vanilla. And I thought, well, I'm used to vanilla, vaguely vanilla Android on my OnePlus phone. And so I want something that's at least vaguely familiar and has some of the similar features like face unlock. I mean, it's got face unlock on a tablet, which is good enough. I don't have the fingerprint stuff, but having face unlock is quite nice because I can just pick it up and it just unlocks and I can carry on reading, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, listeners, we're interested to hear what your thoughts are on tablets in this day and age. Do you have one? Have you had one and decided that it's no longer for you? You can get in touch with us via the usual channels. You can email show@ubuntupodcast.org. You can come and speak to us in our Telegram channel, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And with that, let's see what's next in the show. And now it's time for some GUI love. So which one of you has some GUI love for us this week?
I do.
Go on then, Martin.
So my GUI love is called Key Mapper. And you may remember a couple of episodes ago, I talked about getting a left-handed mouse that also had a bunch of programmable buttons on it. Yeah. And I'm using Key Mapper to bind input to the 12 buttons that I have on this here new mouse.
Gosh, that's a lot of buttons for a mouse.
Yeah. So KeyMapper is, as they call it, an easy tool to change the mapping of your input device buttons. And although I'm using it on my mouse here, it supports mouse, keyboards, gamepads, and display servers that you may have heard of, such as X11 and that there Wayland. I first remember hearing about Wayland about 10 years ago. I think it's just about ready for business these days.
Does it support Mia?
Yes, coming soon. TM. So, yeah, I really like this. It's a simple tool, but if you've got an input device, you know, and you want to map things up, so I'm using it with some macros. And you can switch profiles, and I've got common keys that I invoke. Like when I open a terminal now, and no longer Super T or Control Alt T, it's number one on my little thing here, and it opens the terminal directly under my mouse. And I just press the button and keyboard start typing. So I've got it bound up for all sorts of things, and I've created profiles for different applications. So when I go into video editor and OBS and things, I've got some of my OBS transitions and what have you hooked up under a profile on the mouse buttons. It's pretty cool stuff.
Great. And where can you get Keymapper from?
So it's on GitHub. I forget the full URL, but it'll be in the show notes. And in the releases section of their GitHub, you'll find a deb that you can download and install.
Excellent. And now it's time for all your wonderful feedback. And Patrick emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
Wanted to make some quick comments about the Google versus Oracle decision. One, the decision is final. There is no higher court in the United States. Two, the use of the term as a matter of law should be understood to mean that it is an issue an appeals court can review. In the US system, questions of fact are not subject to appeal. So it's a little bit of a legal sleight of hand to make something reviewable. To say it means that APIs are always fair use is probably too strong a statement. Three, as a precedent, the opinion explicitly states that this will not change any prior rulings by the court. And four, while this is good news, it does not mean that people or groups can ignore copyright when copying APIs. First, from a practical view, an organization must be able to carry the legal fight forward. This case has been years in the making. Second, even if you are in the right, then you can still be sued. Nice summary. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Patrick, for that insight. Yeah. That's really good. Peter Caffrey posted a comment on our website.
I got the knife sharpener mentioned by Popey in an earlier show. I thought I'd give it a go. Fantastic.
It is excellent. It is the best knife sharpener.
I'm still trying to convince my wife we should get one.
I feel like if we put Amazon referral links for all of these things that we recommend, we wouldn't need Patreon anymore.
Princely sum of £2.50.
Yes.
James McBroom emailed us.
After your recent discussion around the latest version of OBS Studio, I thought I'd touch base about my use case. I'm an academic. My area of specialty are maths, computational statistics, and data science. You're probably aware that OBS Studio provides a virtual camera feature in Linux. This has been an enormous benefit to my live online teaching. I can now set up my scenes for various things, lecture notes, course webpage, Python, R, and RStudio, etc. All with little green screen video of my head in the bottom corner. And then use the OBS Studio virtual camera in the application I'm using to deliver my live lecture. Students see whatever scene I select, and I can set up the next one in the preview window. It turns the relatively clunky share screen or share application approach of Teams or Zoom into something altogether more seamless and professional, and students love it. The only issue I have is that I often need to handwrite maths. I do have a Wacom tablet and Zernal installed on Ubuntu, but it's not a great experience. When I have a math-heavy lecture to deliver, I have to admit I boot into Windows 10 and use Drawboard PDF as another scene.
That's interesting feedback, James. Now, I've been working on something around that handwritten notes. Now, we were just talking about tablets earlier. One of the features of my new tablet is it has a stylus and I can write on the screen. But I think you could do this with Zernal as well. I haven't fully fleshed this out, but here's the concept. You set the background color of the thing you're going to write on to green, and you feed that in either as a captured window for Zernal or an HDMI captured source in the case of the tablet. And then you crop your writing area and green screen it out and superimpose it on your scene. And now you can write on your tablet or your Surface and have those things appear in the embedded scene, like one of those magic light marker glass, you know, presentation panels. So that's the idea. I've not fully fleshed it out, but I think that would be kind of nifty.
Excellent. Dan Muir emailed us.
Alan, would you be so kind to share your experience with other listeners and I with virtualizing other Linux desktops under Kubuntu? I love KDE Plasma, but unfortunately some time ago a very unpleasant bug was introduced in KDE Plasma that makes it impossible to use Virt Manager. VMs work, but clipboard on host doesn't, and it's a very bad experience.
So I use QuickEMU by my good friend Martin Wimpress. And it's a little thing that I cloned off Martin's GitHub, and you create a little config file and it's a little bit command line-y. It's not got like a web UI or a graphical front end, but you just run quickemu and then point it at the config file, which tells quickemu where to find the ISO image and the disk image. And if the disk image doesn't exist, it creates it. It makes loads of assumptions and defaults, but you can override those in the config file. For example, you can override it to be EFI instead of BIOS and all the other stuff you need to do. And that's what I do. And I find it actually very easy to use. And cleaning up afterwards is just a case of throwing away the ISO image or throwing away the disk image and the config file. I find it really pleasant. I don't do any clipboard stuff to and from the VM, so I haven't tried that. Martin could probably talk about that, though.
I have recently heard that that clipboard exchange is broken in QuickEMU, and I'll be fixing that in the coming week or so. So we're going to be working on that.
Nice.
Excellent. Pierre Ecoy emailed us.
In Season 14, Episode 6, you talk about the different desktop environments, the bundled apps, and if developers should just drop some of them and use third-party app that does the same thing. I thought the same until I installed Lubuntu for a friend of mine. I was quite baffled at the lack of consistency between the different default apps. Even some of the system apps are third-party, and I think it has a real impact on the user experience. That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I think Lubuntu falls into the category of sort of the Unix philosophy. It's sort of composed of lots of discrete tools that do one job and do it well.
Ukash Piaski emailed us.
I always use the minimal installation of Ubuntu. The default applications that I really use are the calculator and GNOME terminal. I also use Geary, sometimes GNOME boxes, and LibreOffice. I recently installed KDE, but I always feel overwhelmed by the number of applications. The default KDE application that I really like is the Kate editor. It turns out that the new version is full of new features, so it can also replace Visual Studio Code.
Interesting. Yeah, in my early days as a web developer, I used Kate as my main text editor. It is, even then, it was, you know, a very powerful, fully featured editor. It's quite good.
Mm.
Torin Doyle left a comment on our website.
On the topic of desktop environments, I started with GNOME 2 in 2008 and went to XFCE after GNOME 2 went away, then Mate, and I'm very happy with it. The Kaja file manager is perfect for my needs. Mate has just the right amount of config options and not too much and not too little. Now, that's all lovely to hear, but I think what we have to do is remember that, you know, Mate is just sort of the preservation of GNOME 2 and its human interface guidelines that were so thoughtfully curated, you know, back when that was being, you know, designed and developed.
Tobias Anderson Gidland emailed us.
I have for some years tried to use KDE Plasma, which seemed to be your destination when getting away from GNOME. But in contrast to what so many of you podcasters say, I cannot understand why one should use KDE Plasma. But as soon as I start it, I remember why I don't like it. Every time I try to customize it, like putting the panel on the left, there are always small details that make it look even more ugly. GNOME, on the other hand, works just fine. When GNOME 3 arrived, it only took a few hours to find fast, efficient workflow. Today, I use a lot of workspaces and easily jump between them, and everything looks professional out of the box. The desktop is my front end to the computer, and GNOME gets out of the way in the best possible way, giving me easy-to-use shortcuts for everything I would like to do on my computer. I don't understand why everyone is so impressed with KDE Plasma. What am I missing? That's a good question. I don't know. There's been a couple of comments in the feedback, suggestions that, you know, people don't like KDE Plasma. That's fine. It's okay. It's not a problem. Don't worry about it. I like it, and it works on my computer. You don't have to like it. It's all right.
Yeah. To be honest, for me, like back in the early days, I used to configure the heck out of it. I used to have it in a completely unrecognizable state. These days, it lets me configure it just enough to get it, you know, that sweet spot where, you know, I can spend 5 minutes configuring it and then I leave it there. And that's it for me. Whereas, you know, with GNOME, I didn't have the option to do just those few tweaks I needed without installing a bunch of other stuff.
And if I remember rightly, Alan, you elected to use KDE not because the way it looked or the way it worked, but you were seeking better stability that you weren't getting from GNOME on your machines. Is that right?
That's certainly part of it, and right. Performance as well. I find KDE is a lot faster, but also the tweakability is certainly a factor. Like today, I switched off drop shadows on Windows because when you have two windows next to each other snapped together. KDE, which it's a bug, you know, it should know when two windows are snapped together, you shouldn't have a shadow cast from one to the other. It looks weird. So I just turned off all the drop shadows, and that was just click a setting, look for the shadow option, turn it off. And that's easy because it's presented in the settings. I think that, you know, there's a lot of tiny little tweakables that you can do in KDE that make it super personal. It's not like there's one big switch that you flick to go making it from unusable to usable. There's lots and lots of tiny little things that add up to the experience that you get. And each person who uses KDE switches a whole bunch of different things.
Yeah, so the few tweaks that I've made are going to be different to the few tweaks you've made, and I probably hate using yours.
Yeah, totally.
And finally, thanks to Jason for sharing his comments on how much of the Windows desktop environment he finds value in, and thank you to John for his list of recommended applications. And that's all for episode 8. Thank you everyone for joining us once again. Next week, we'll be discussing the community news, the general goings-on, and events. If you want to get in touch with us in the meantime and send us all of your wonderful feedback, or just the highlights of your wonderful feedback, you can email show@ubuntupodcast.org. You can tweet us at Ubuntu Podcast on Twitter. And if you're in the market for a fine, fine VPS, you can check out bitfolk.com for just that.